say. Cuchulainn cried, is larger far than life itself. But Ferrier just grinned, shook his golden hair. Everything I do is ringed about with fantasy. But Ferrier just laughed, shook his silver spear, and fell to battle again. Holland cried, is measured out in centuries. Ferdier just laughed and shook his golden mane. I must make my stand, for your death is my destiny. But Ferdier just laughed, shook his silver spear, and fell to battle.
Chris Heron, host of the hour, first to follow the fox named Eve, with books laid before the bear named Em, to read and retire around the long fire.
This is it. The last episode.
And until you're back.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't make it so ominous.
You know, I have a fatalistic heart.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that I have to entertain it.
I have this thing. You know this. Most of my friends know this, but I'm gonna make the audience upset and anxious because I can. It's my prerogative. Every time I go under anesthesia, I just have the thought. I'm like, I'm just never gonna wake up. This is it. They're gonna put me under, and it's gonna be the last thing I ever think, and then I'll never wake up, and that'll be the end of me. Very healthy. Yeah.
Healthy was definitely what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Well,
I just am a catastrophizer, so I always picture the worst possible outcome, and the worst possible outcome is dying during surgery, right? That'd be pretty bad.
That would be.
And correct. Some of it's like the one that, like, there's like other options I think scare me more because this one's kind of out of my, like, I won't even know it happened, right?
Yeah, like there is a degree to deaths where, it just kind of happens. You're just like, you go to sleep and never wake up.
Yeah.
Do sound significantly more pleasant than a lot of other possible deaths.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there aren't ones where I would be aware that I might enjoy the experience of, but, I feel like, you know, there's the classic, Emo Phillips joke of, I want to die like my grandfather, peacefully in my sleep and not like the, people on his bus screaming and trying to wake him up.
That's pretty good. And so, like, it's like, oh, the surgery could be like a disaster. Blah. Like, there's other things that could happen that, like, I'd wake up from and it would be bad. And on some level, those are like harder, like, those are more anxiety inducing to consider. So I just settle on this one as like my kind of grim position, which is unlikely to happen, right? It could happen, but it's unlikely to happen. I have plenty of things to do on the other side of this. I have not, like, consigned myself to the grave. I just feel this way every time I go under. I just, know, there's always a risk. Anesthesia's fucked up like that. They don't really know why it works. You know, sometimes it just makes you feel weird.
Yeah. But also there is a person whose entire job is to make sure that you're getting the proper amount or you won't
die. I don't think I'm that concerned about it. But it's just like, it's like whenever I get on a plane, it's like, this plane's probably fine, but it might not be. And I'm just going to consider that a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I'm like particularly like paralyzed by this fear, but I do have this in me, this like constant nagging consideration that like, oh, this could kill me.
Yeah.
A lot of latent anxiety.
Correct. I've noticed this. Yes.
This is our final episode until I'm back from surgery. That means we'll be gone for, I'm going to say probably 2 weeks, but I always have the option of it being longer and there's always the chance it's shorter, but it probably won't be. I'm going to be honest with you.
I am guesting on a podcast. I'm guesting on Swim Fans. Mm-hmm. And our plan is to record that second Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So even if I'm home, fuck me, I guess.
So if you're home, we can like do it Thursday then.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Or I can tell them and push it, but.
Uh-huh. Well, my incredibly full schedule that I'll have when I get back from surgery, I really couldn't fit you in on Thursday. It'd have to be Wednesday or nothing.
Yeah. In some ways, I made this decision being like, this would be an extra impulse to be like, no, you should rest.
This was the first podcast I came back to last time I was at the hospital.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell, I think I told the story that I immediately after we recorded stepped on my wound vac and had to rush to the hospital and the whole city was like out of power. So we were driving past because it had been a horrible storm. So you're driving past like fallen trees and like road crews. Nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a rough night. I enjoy podcasting. It might not have been worth that trip to the ER. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks everyone. By the time this is going to drop on Monday afternoon, I'll still be around. I'll be grumpy because I won't be able to eat any solid food. I'll be on clear liquids only. So I'll be brothed up and grumpy. But if you're listening to this on Tuesday when it's, you know, out in the world, the day we plug it, I'll already be in surgery because my surgery is at like, I have to check in at 5:30. I think my surgery is at 7:30 a.m. So you're probably listening to this after the fact.
Yeah.
So look for updates. You can go ahead and you, because Destiny probably won't remember the Blue Sky post and people don't follow her as much. Feel free to tweet that I'm fine. You can.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if I do it, it won't be for another, like, you know, day because I'll be asleep most of Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, people can retweet it or whatever.
Yeah.
Do it when you plug the podcast. Be like, podcast is out. Also, M's out of surgery. They're fine. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a good way to do it.
Yeah. You have to. If I'm not fine, you're like, you have to listen. This is the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I know that you don't like to rotate this idea. No one does. Everyone's mad at me every time I do this. My therapist, I did this to my therapist, and then she was like, you got to email me when you're done surgery. You can't just be like this. I'm like, I will. It'll probably be a day or two, because I'm not going to be emailing on Tuesday, but I will send you an email letting you know I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's not like spreading the anxiety, my anxiety to other people makes my anxiety go down. It just raises everyone else's anxiety.
Also, I continue to just have the, like, I would be sad if you died.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that. Yeah, everyone
which,
would.
Which is, I mean, but it's also just an impulse that I have whenever anybody jokes about dying in any context. Because there's definitely a certain amount of joking about, you know, wanting to be dead that is sometimes just a joke and sometimes reflection of, you know, suicidality and stuff.
I love being alive is the thing about me. Yeah. I can genuinely say I don't think I've ever been suicidal in my life. And, that's not to like discount people who are, it's just never been my experience. Like even when I'm miserable, I'm always like, there's some other stuff I could be doing. Yeah. I might have a hard time like doing it. I might be like wallowing in a moment, but, I don't know. I've been through some shit. And I've always come out the other side. Okay. Like there's always something. I haven't run into a thing where I'm like, nah, this is unendurable.
Yeah.
So hopefully I never do, you know, knock on wood.
But I mean, as somebody who was suicidal at one time in my life,
no, I understand
made a lot of jokes.
I understand it's a sore point. I try not to do it.
Some of it is I made a lot of jokes, and looking back on it, I wish that when I was making those jokes, people would have been like, no, I don't want you to die. That would be sad. Instead of laughing. Like just reflecting on my own experiences of making those jokes. I'm like, the thing that I would have wanted was that. And I'm just going to do
I
that.
Feel that feedback from people in my life all the time. So, you know, I like my therapist is always like, oh, when I'm like talking about something, it's like, oh, have you talked to your friends or your girlfriends about this? I'm like, yeah, well, like I wouldn't have them if I didn't want to talk to them. what do you people come in here and don't talk to their like partners about things that are going on in their life and things that I think you're feeling. And she gives me a look like every day.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I like communicating. I like to tell people how I feel about them, and I like people to tell me how they feel about me. That's an important thing for me. I mean, it always was, but it really has been the past year. That is the thing. Like coming out the other side, I'm almost dying. You're like, man, I should just make sure everyone knows that I like them a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've been like last week was the anniversary, and I've just been like in my head about all of this lately as we rocket towards the end. And I'm like, my health is still bad and I'm still exhausted. That didn't get better over last week. What are you gonna do? I just need to sleep a full night's sleep, and that's not gonna happen until next week.
Yeah. Wow. Should we get into the saga?
Yeah.
Not to move us away from this.
No. We got all sorts of stupid shit to talk about today.
Yeah. So, I'm going to do my rundown. We read parts 2 through 4.
Yes.
Of the town. It's always, because on other podcasts you've mentioned it, and the lack of lilt is just always funny to me.
I know. I'm just like, I need to like figure out how to say it and not just say the town because it's stupid. My Midwestern thudding accent.
It's just when I hear it, I'm like, it's just being,
I don't know what I need to do to make it sound right.
Yeah.
What do I need to do? Tell me what I need to do.
There's like two, because it also exists in like Niv, right? Like, especially. My family's from Donegal, which is just like, I mean, it is the Ulster, like, Irish up there. And I feel like Donegal in particular is just like very lilty. There just lots of other parts of Ireland, people will just say Neve.
I asked you how to say the word. You're giving me a story.
Well, but so some of this is just like additional context. There might be parts of Ireland where it's flat, like you're saying it, right? Yeah. But to me, it's just like, this is lilted. And often, when I'm looking at it, if there are two letters, that's like, it doesn't always mean, but it's a clue that there's going to be a lilt in there. Mm-hmm. And there's basically been two ways when I'm like explaining it with my own name that, one of them will sometimes work for people and then, or the other one. One is that like, there's sort of a dip down and up that happens, similar to like in, you know, there's like Chinese tone. Yes. That does this. And so you kind of, it kind of goes down and back up. And so you're like making the same sound, but it just sort of dips down and back up as you do it. The other one is to say you are just like making it two syllables and you're just kind of slurring them together. And so like it could be like, it's like tone, like you're doing like ta, like that, and then in, but then you're just slurring it together really fast. And so, one of those works for people often. But
so the tone.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. It's hard. That's I feel like it's just antithetical to the way English works. I also don't say your name with a lilt either, so.
Yeah. But it is just a thing that's like, I think I just grew up hearing the lilt enough that like it's normal to me.
My thing about the lilt in your name specifically is, I think it's very easy for like a native English speaker to overcorrect it. And then you sound like when Chris Remo said your name and it's like too cringe to abide.
Yeah. And it's like Niev.
Niev.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I prefer people just do the flat Niev, which
what
is,
what about the Narissa Ravencroft? Meow.
I mean, she drew, it's the best mispronunciation of my name that I've ever gotten.
I love it because it's just a race car noise.
And she drew it out so that it's like knee and then like yum, like just drawn out like
yum. That's the sound of cars going around an oval at like the Indianapolis 500.
I'm saying it could also be the sound of a cannibal eating me and then saying yum.
That's true. That's fair. You would let Narissa Ravencroft eat you. I think that's true.
I don't know if she would want to, but...
Yeah. No, I think she'd be squicked out by this.
Yeah. I mean, what if we, like, got them to grind up some of my meat and make it into a Culver's burger for her?
I think it's a perfectly waste of human being, but yeah, sure.
I know. you and I are aligned in that, like, if we're being eaten, ideally, like, you know... Treat it like when you see videos of Japanese chefs with like the minimal preparation, just like real respect of the ingredient, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like sashimi, or just like a very, like you're cooking it, but in a way that really just highlights the flavor of the meat, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even think you should cook it. That's my crazy opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm like, if you do cook it, like it should be a preparation that highlights the flavor there.
Yes.
Look, I'm also like, if somebody was eating parts of my body, there are some stuff that I think you should not cook. You should just eat like sashimi or whatever. But there's stuff that you're going to have to like preserve longer term, or that is just like those cuts of meat that aren't going to be the prime cuts of meat, you know? And like, I understand doing a different, the idea of someone doing lots of different preparation, is appealing to me.
Okay. That's fair. There's a dedication to like the craft of devouring.
Yeah.
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 I'm not against it. I just am aesthetically more interested in like fresh off the bone, so to speak.
I know.
Do we want to talk about the book?
There are a number of, I kind of like the way that this book is handled, the REM scale of like, they will often show up as endnotes. I wish it was footnotes. I wish it was like kind of just living on the same page. But I still like the idea of here's the story that's going to be a little bit more straightforward. But then we're going to keep giving you the little notes where you go in there and you're like, oh, there's just like a page of story back here. I think it's just a fun way of like representing the kind of splintery nature of this style of storytelling. I'm going to highlight a couple of them, in particular.
Someone should make a Twine version of this, is what I'm, what you're saying, basically.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But we start with one, like, before basically anything happens, about Deirdre, who is, prophesied by Kappa to cause much evil from her birth. And she is promised to Konkavar, the king, from birth. But she falls in love with a boy named Noishu, who has raven black hair, blood red cheeks, and snow white skin. Specifically, Deirdre sees like a raven just like tearing apart some cadaver basically in the snow, I think. Or no, they were slaughtering a bull, I think. And then like the raven is coming in and like eating some of it and the blood and everything. And so there's like the blood in the snow and the raven. And she's like, this is so hot. I want a boy who looks like this, basically. And her dad's like, I know a boy, and takes her. And she's like, yeah, this boy is really hot. Anyway, the fact that she falls in love with this other boy causes a whole bunch of conflict, and Deirdre and Noishu flee. Eventually, they are lured back by Fergus McRoig, who we've met already. And basically, everybody who, you know, helped Deirdre flee is killed. She's like the only one who survives, and she lives for a few years in misery. It's like at least 1 year with, Konkavar. And then, one day, so there's a part where she's like, I'm miserable here. And he's like, you can go, live with, Owen, who is the one of the guys who like helped basically kill everybody. And there's a part where they're traveling on a wagon, and Owen is in front, and Konkavar is behind her, and she sees this large block of stone coming up ahead, and she, like, just leans out so that her own head gets smashed to bits on the rock, and that's how she dies. Anyway, random aside, Alil and Maeve are mustering an army in Connacht, and they have a feast in preparation for the campaign ahead. Maeve goes to her druid to see what her fate is, and the druid is like, whoever comes back or not, you will come back. And she's like, oh, okay, this sounds like fairly good news. And then she's traveling back from seeing the druid and comes across a woman poet named Fethel, who has second sight. And Maeve asks Fathom the fate of the army, and Fathom says, I see it crimson, I see it red, and Maeve is like, that can't be right, and basically just keeps asking the same question and keeps getting the same answer. But she's like, she doesn't believe this because Konkavar and the other men of Ulster are supposed to be laid up with a curse. And eventually, as Maeve just keeps asking the same question and getting the same answer, Fethlum responds in poetry and just describes how sick Cuchulainn is. He's a really powerful little twink. He's going to fuck up all of their shit. It's not really explained why Cuchulainn is affected by the curse. By the way, the curse gets explained at some point in this. I don't remember where it was in all of this. But basically, The people of Ulster forced a pregnant woman to do a chariot race. And she was like, I don't want to do that because I'm pregnant. And at the end of the race, she gave birth, and like the wailing of her and her children cursed all of them. And they're just like laid up whenever it's really important for them to not be laid up. But for some reason, this doesn't affect Cuchulainn. Maybe it's because he's young. Maybe it's because he's so faggy with it, and the curse is like, the girls' gays and theys are spared. He's not affected. So, we learn that he's not affected as part of this poem. Then at the end of this, there's just a very long enumeration of all of the places that the army is going to go through on their route to Kunga to do the raid. But then the next chapter just like starts at the beginning of their journey. And so we get some of the places. And the first night, or like an early night on the route, they camp. And Maeve goes around to look at how all of the soldiers are faring. And she sees that... I forget the name of this group, but there's a group that's like super cool. And so everybody else is like, they're like just way ahead of everybody in terms of preparing for the night and stuff. I think it's like, the Galleon, I believe. Mm. But anyway, she's like, they are clearly so much superior to like all of our soldiers that if we just let them stick together, they are going to claim the victory as theirs when we get there. But if we also have them stay behind, they're just going to conquer all of our lands while we're gone. So, like, we now have this problem. And Fergus is like, well, why don't we just split them up so that no more than five of them remain together, and there's just, like, a little bit of them with every one of our battalions. And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Also in this, they hunt a bunch of deer. The next night, Duhok says some cryptic shit about how Cuchulainn is going to fuck everyone's shit up. And everyone has a really bad night about it. Like, nobody sleeps well because of this. They continue on, and they decide to have Fergus lead them, since he was once king of Ulster, so, like, it would make sense. He kind of knows the lay of the land here. Also, this is a battle of vengeance for him, because he's going to, like, you know, fight the people who ousted him and exiled him. However, he has remaining sympathy for the people of Ulster, and so he leads them astray and delays their arrival, and during that sends a message to Ulster warning them that people are coming. Maeve notices that they're taking a wonky route, and she's like, hey, what's up? Why are we doing this? And he's like, I just want to delay our inevitable meeting with Cuchulainn.
Yes.
Yeah. Which, a little bit fair, I guess. but still, he's up to some trickery here. Speaking of, Cuchulainn and his dad receive word from Fergus that forces are coming. And it's like, they're going to be here tonight. They're like finally on their way. They have the signs that, you know, the army, Maeve's army is coming. But Cuchulainn's like, damn, I gotta go have sex with, like, this woman who, works for Fethelm. And, like, if I didn't keep my promise, then they'd be like, you know, men don't keep their promises, women do. And they're like, yeah, good point. You do gotta go fuck that bondsmaid. And so before he leaves, he cuts a loop of wood, as just like a giant strip, like around the tree. And then inscribes in it in, Olam's script that, no one can pass unless a man among them can cut a loop in the same manner. There's also a like PS on here, which is that Fergus doesn't count. It has to be someone other than him.
Yes.
Which is funny. Fergus calls over a druid, and the druid is like, yeah, this is legit. He'll kill you for sure if you go past this, and nobody can do it, and Fergus can't do it. So, like, you know, you gotta do it. The rules play. And so they're like, well, fuck. Instead of trying to do that, let's just cut down, like, an entire forest to go a different route. And this, you know, becomes an explanation for, like why an area was cut down. Then basically the same thing happens again, but this time, Cuchulainn cuts down the fork of a tree and plants it in the earth with one hand. And then also four guys from Maeve's army who've been running ahead, come up, and he kills them all and impales their heads on the four forks, and writes in script again, about somebody has to, like, you know, do the same deed of cutting the fork from a tree in, like, one strike, one-handed, but does forget, or no, I think it's, this time has to pull it out, but does forget to disqualify Fergus. So when they go, Fergus, after destroying many chariots, is able to pull it out.
Yeah. When, like, he uses, like, a dozen chariots or whatever.
Yeah. We're going to get a thing like this repeated, but
yeah.
People love to destroy other people's chariots and then be like, okay, fine, bring the good one, and then do it.
Yeah.
Fergus explains that this must have been Cuchulainn because no one else could do this. And also be alone with no one but his charioteer, rather than with, like, an entire battalion, because they don't see, like, the tracks of, like, an army went through here. It was just one guy and his, you know, charioteer. And Maeve is like, I doubt that one guy could be this powerful. And so Fergus, and then also, Conall Cearnach, They tell multiple stories to Maeve about the deeds of Cuchulainn performed in his youth. This includes, like, he traveled this really far distance really fast by playing a game where he would, like, throw a ball and then throw a stick at the ball to hit the ball to make it go further, and then throw a javelin after it all, and then he would run and catch all of that before it hit the ground. He also competed on his own at sports against a bunch of other lads, deflected all their attacks when they turned on him. And in the process of fighting back against them, just goes Super Saiyan. His hair gets spiky and, like, electric. He just goes Super Saiyan.
A light comes out of his mouth. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, other things that he does, he destroys his alarm clock for waking up in the morning, but the alarm clock is the skull of a guy who tried to wake him up. And so everyone's like, well, we're just going to let him sleep in from now on.
It's specifically someone came to wake him up and he, like, bopped him on the head so much the brain, like, the skull shattered and went into his brain and killed him.
Yeah. Yeah. We also get more of him fighting a bunch of boys because of sports. He
crashes someone's pickup game and just, like, runs on the field and starts playing with them. Also, yeah. I love that when he's traveling, like, when he's a boy, whenever he goes somewhere, his whole thing is that he's, like, throwing either, like, a javelin or a stone, like, from a sling. And, like, it starts with him, like, using it as just a thing to do. So he throws it and then he runs after it. It makes him go faster. By the time he's an adult, he's throwing, like, the rock into the air and then, like, catching it before it lands.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is sick as hell.
He also saves Konkavar from being left for dead on the battlefield. He fends off a raiding party of 27 when he was just 5. Yes. All of these deeds are described as being before he was 7.
Who was the fucking swole little kid in the Icelandic sagas? Which one was that? They should hang out.
I think it was Ale.
Yeah, I think it was Ale also. Yeah,
they should hang out for sure.
Yeah.
He also plays a bunch of gay ass sports against 150 men, including winning the gayest game.
I thought it was 350.
Maybe it is. Yeah. Including winning again in the gayest game apparently ever invented, strip tag, where you just try and strip each other naked, and none of them are able to strip him, but he strips all of these guys naked.
In the middle of, like, a sentence talking about where there was another game about, like, shooting a shot and filling the hole. He filled all the holes and stripped all the men naked. That happened. That's the thing that happened. Yeah.
We also do get the story of him brutally killing Cullen's guard dog and then offering to be the guard dog and rear him a new one. This man not beating the allegations.
No.
And then there's a longer two-part story about Cullen where he overhears Kafa making predictions. And then in response to that, Kafa being, like, sort of a, you know, old man druidy guy, who's the father of Konkavar. In response to it, doing, you know, all sorts of deeds. The first one is Kafa being like, whoever takes up Armstay will be famous forever. And Cuchulainn, like, goes to Konkavar and is like, bring out arms for me. Keeps destroying them until finally King Konkavar brings out his own arms, and then Cuchulainn takes those up. And then Kafa comes in and is like, you fool, you'll be famous forever but die young. And Cuchulainn's like, that's fine as long as I'm famous forever. Like, that sounds cool to me. And then the other one is anyone who takes up a chariot will be famous forever. And Konkavar brings out a bunch of chariots. Cuchulainn destroys all of them until Konkavar brings out his own chariot, and then with his own charioteer. And then Cuchulainn goes out on it, goes super far out to the mountains, fights 3 champion warriors, puts their heads on spears on the chariot, and then on the way back, they see some, like, super cool deer, and he catches the most powerful one and is just, like, strong arming it to like hold it onto the back.
Yeah, he like lashes it to his horses, right?
Yeah.
But like still alive, because he's like people be impressed if I got one of those, right? And they're like, yeah, of course. And it's like, they usually bring him back dead, right? And like, yeah, no one's ever caught a live deer. That's crazy. He's like, well, look at this shit. Mm-hmm.
And then they come across a flock of swans, and Cuchulainn would be like, it'd be sick if I brought all those back, right? And we'd be like, yeah. I'd be like, and I should bring them back alive, right? It would be cooler if they're alive. And then knocks them all out with a special ricochet stone tossing trick. Which that's just like a hunter thing.
Yeah.
Happening.
And so he's coming in with like this deer alive on his horses and these swans all leashed to his thing and three heads on spears. And he comes up to the gate and everyone's like, fuck.
Yeah. And he's like, send out someone for me to fight.
And they're like, we're going to send the women.
Yeah. We're going to send a bunch of women, naked women out instead. And Cuchulainn hides his face either because he's embarrassing a bunch of naked women or because he's gay. And he's like, I don't want to see that.
This is the gayest man alive. He is not interested.
And because he hides his face, people are able to grab him, and they have to dunk him into three barrels of cold water to chill him the fuck out. The first one,
I love this. This burst. Is crazy. Yeah. I need someone to do this to me. It would fix me, honestly.
The first one just like completely bursts. It like explodes. They put him in and he just explodes. And then the second one boils.
In my mental picture of this, like he's so like overheated with like virility and power that all the water just converts to steam and blows the barrel up.
Yeah. And then the second one boils, and then they put him in the third one, and he finally chills the fuck out.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's seven when he does this. He's 17, so think about how sick he is. He's 17 now,
so it's like, what the fuck is this man's gonna punch the moon out?
It's fucking Goku over here.
Shonen power scaling has nothing on ancient literature, is what I'm saying. We keep running across this, and it's just true. I gotta be honest, I played Fates Tonight, I played Holoraxia. He does not have shit in those games compared to this.
Yeah.
He's like a B tier at best.
So most of this is just about how both homosexual and sick Cuchulainn is. And I'm like, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been funny that, like, I know that you don't like Colin in the Fate games. Yeah. Because I'm just, like, having read some of this stuff, I'm like, he's pretty sick, and he's also really gay with it.
He mostly just exists to, like, take orders and, like, kind of be, like, better than the people who give him orders. Because he's, like, the noble guy, but he's being controlled by some shitty people in Fate Stay Night. And, then they get into his backstory, but it's kind of presented really haphazardly because Fate's not the best written game. Especially I played the pre-new, like the Rialta Nua fan translation, which is not particularly well written. And so I thought all the backstory was boring, so I didn't really read that much closely about it. And then by Holoraxia, he's just kind of like fishing on the pier and like working a bunch of like part-time jobs because once the battle's over, he's like, well, I don't know what to do. I'm like a soldier guy. I'm like a fighter. There's no fight, Taff.
I'm supposed to die young. You'd be famous forever.
Yeah. Instead, he mostly watches Shiro get menaced by various women, clearly uninterested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great, though.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with these chapters.
Yeah, it's gonna be a real shame when he like ruins Maeve's whole deal because I like her a lot. But
yeah, he's gonna be gay while he does it though.
Yeah, but she's not gonna respond well to that.
I know.
You think a woman like that has any place for a gay man in her retinue? Absolutely not.
That's true.
Especially one who like is so like aghast at the female form that he covers his face when he sees a naked woman.
Yeah.
There's like different levels of being a gay man in the world. And that's like one that's like, that's a little much.
Yeah. And, Maeve is great. I don't say this derisively, but I assume she's got like, you know, that meme of like pussy out, like facing the world. You know, this meme.
I don't know specifically what you're talking about, but I do know the like idea of this as a thing.
It comes from like parody stuff around ones where it's like the cock shaming stuff. But you know, it's like the guy with like the legs together or whatever. And then pussy face in the
world.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. I did this with one of the mechs from Gundam X that's just pussy out.
Yeah. But I don't think Kuholin's over here being like cock shame. No way. This man fights with his gay bulge.
Yeah. A little might be though.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
But Kuholin is, you know, cock out facing the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unstoppable force meets movable object.
Yeah.
But it's a saga, so the woman's going to lose. Like, I just know that. Show me one where that doesn't happen.
Yeah. And the gay man will have to tragically kill his lover.
Oh, yeah. He's also going to fail. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited, though. To read through all of this.
Yeah, me too.
I don't entirely remember Maeve's fate. There's like pieces of this that I know and pieces of this that I don't. Again,
this is like totally new to me. No idea.
I mean, you do know the Faerdia thing because it came up in the intro, but that's like one of the big things, which I've just known about this forever. I picked the opening song because it is the song about that.
Yeah, but by and large, this is like all new to me.
Yeah. Yeah. The one part of the reading that was not that fun was where they just described the route.
Oh, I like, okay, we're just going to skip to the next three pages.
Yeah. I mean, I sped through it, but I did read everything.
I did not read everything. It was just a route. It was just a route.
Yeah.
A route, if you will.
Yeah, so true.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at it again, being like, how far have we even gotten along this? I don't know. I feel like it's gotten fast and loose with locations in the actual story of everything.
Hmm.
Do they have the? There's the, okay. The Ford of the Fork is in here. So, if I look at that, where that fork thing happens, that's like halfway through this route. So they're on the way.
Okay.
Yeah. Next time, what are we reading next time? I don't remember that.
I don't know. It's going to be, I didn't even think about it.
I know. But we should tell the people, even though it'll be a little bit.
Okay, yeah. We have a
screen. I've got it. I'm looking.
Okay.
Parts 5 and 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look forward to that. Don't know what it'll be a couple weeks from now.
Yeah. We will for sure have 2 weeks of not reading it.
Hmm. Yeah. Even if I came back and wanted to record, we would just like catch up.
Yeah. So do you have anything else about the saga or?
No, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was great fun. These oral tradition sagas really do just have a spice that it was lost.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all, there's always just like an amount I enjoy the way that you can kind of feel the seams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you don't always know exactly where they are, you're like, I know that there are seams here. And there are times where I can see them and times when I am just like, at some point, I think we're just pulling from something else now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, some of it too being, I feel like there are parts where it almost feels like even though it's in prose, the rhythm of like something that might happen in poetry, like the thing where Maeve keeps asking the question and getting the same answer. And then like, this is just like, I can like see the poetry form here that has like ends in the repeated phrase. And then there's like another stanza, but it's just prose now. Right. So, that stuff's always fun. And yeah, I enjoy the, random asides that get, again, I wish they were footnotes, but still as end notes, I think it's a fun way to handle it. There is something nice about flipping to the back of the book and just reading a little short thing. It's only tangentially related and keeping your finger in like where the main part is, you know, and then flipping back. That does, you know, I think I would like the footnote more, but there's still a certain charm to that too. Well, do you have anything else?
About the saga? No.
No, I mean, outside of saga. I know you've got other stuff outside of saga, but...
Yeah, so I'm reading a new book.
Yeah.
I'm reading Detransition Baby, the 2020 novel by Tori Peters. I'm like 40% in. I'll clearly be done by the next time we talk. Do you know what this is about? I know it's like kind of a, I remember it being kind of a big deal online when it came out, but I wasn't really paying attention at the time.
Yeah, I have it, and I've read like at least a third to a half of it.
Okay.
And fell off of it, I think in part just because it was in the period where I was like trying to get back into reading books and I was unmedicated and everything. It was just hard to stay on books. And also there's just like so much people talking about it online that
I think that's, I had, like, that's died down more. Since then. Yeah. I would not have read it at the time where people were buzzing about it.
Yeah.
But I, you know, it's been on my to-do list. And I was like, you know what? This seems relatively short. I'll go tear through this one. So, this is about like three people. The main two characters are Reese and Ames / Amy. So Reese is like a trans woman who's living in, they're in New York. Yeah, they're in New York. And she works in childcare and was just like going stealth in childcare and was like given a baby and just wants to have like a family or whatever, but lives a, I would say a very like, this like Tori Peters is trans, but I would say she lives a very like stereotypical like early 30 something trans urban lifestyle where it's like you mostly hang out with other trans people and it's a lot of like casual relationships and not taking life very seriously as you just try to get by and like contemplate your own transness and what it means and trying to like navigate that. Which is fine. And then she, there's like two main time periods of the book. And in one of the, in the past version, she falls in love with Amy. Amy's like newly trans and, she kind of like takes on this like mentor role, but really falls for her. And Amy's a fucking mess. In the present day, Amy has decided to detransition back into Ames, and is living as a man now. And he works as like the assistant for this, ad executive named Katrina. Who he has gotten pregnant because he didn't think he could because he'd been taking hormones for years. But it turns out science is weird like that. And got her pregnant. And then she didn't know that he had been trans for a huge part of his life. And he decides he has to tell her because he takes this whole being a father thing really weird. And he decides, and him and Reese are broken up, obviously. And he decides that the solution to the problem of her being weird about him being having been trans and him being weird about the idea of fatherhood and kind of still wanting Reese in his life because he misses that part of himself, even though he couldn't like he just wasn't capable of like living that way, is to marry them both sides of his life together into a new weird like platonic throuple where they raise the kid together and has to get them both on board with this, which is where I'm at right now. They're kind of like in the idea where they're both like entertaining the idea, which seems insane, frankly, to both of them. I mean, the presentation of why they both say yes makes sense to me. It's not like out of the blue. It's just a big ask. It's a big fucking ask. People who don't know each other to enter the situation.
Yeah.
It's mostly a book about like the conflict between like people transition and become trans and live their lives as trans people. And you have trans friends and you like live as like out and obviously trans, whatever that means for you. But then like for most people, that's kind of where the imaginary stops for that. And it's like, well, you still, maybe at that point for a lot of people, you're like in your early 30s. What does you still have to live the rest of your life. What does that look like? And because many people lack a sense of queer history, and because culture has actively tried to separate people from queer history, and a lot of the elder queer people have been erased by time and AIDS and the government and everything else that has happened in the last couple decades, there's not a lot of framework to like hang your hat on without like actively trying to seek it out. And if you're in the middle of like just being kind of fucked up and in your late 20s, early 30s, it's hard to figure out. Like the reasons that like Ames detransitions are interesting, and that like he wasn't really getting what he wanted out of taking estrogen and being Amy. Also, he just was at this part where he was like, I feel trans, but like no one else seems to like be supportive of it. And I have to just work every day at something that I get no reward for. And he gets like beat up by some guys in Brooklyn, and it's like, no one lifted a finger. No one's there for me. And I just don't want to live my life where I'm constantly like worried about getting assaulted. I'd rather just figure out a new thing, like something else. But has a lot of weird feelings about how it estranges him from all the people he used to know when he was Amy. Right.
Yeah.
Except for Reese, who's like really hurt about the whole thing, 'cause they were like very clearly in love for many years. But also she's seemingly kind of like, she's known as someone who's like, there's a bit where they describe her as like she likes to play with people's hearts. Like she gets really invested in them and then kind of drops people for reasons that seem kind of petty sometimes. And there's one person like in like her social circle who's like, Reese is the only trans girl who all her problems don't stem from the fact that she's trans. It stems from the way she carries herself as a woman, which I think is like very, a very like vivid descriptor of some of certain type of mess.
Yeah.
And then Katrina's like this, you know, high functioning, very straight, coded woman who, she's like Chinese and Jewish, and, Ames thinks that he can relate to her as like a marginal outgroup by like the fact that he used to be trans and she's like mixed race, but that isn't clean, and not, you can't just like do that. You can't just like map one onto the other. And so it causes a lot of weird friction between them. And then she's like weirded out that he lied to her about all this stuff and takes it kind of badly. She's working through it. Has a very basic understanding of queerness. Yeah. And it's just like the messiness of their lives and stuff. And I think it's really good. I think in many ways it's about this, like when you stop being like a young trans person and you start being a middle-aged trans person, like I'm about to be 40, you're in your mid 30s. I don't like middle age is a big period, but like, we're not young anymore. Right. Yeah. We're not adolescents. We're not in our 20s. You've got a kid, like we're living our lives. I got a 401k, and I have like 3 medical specialists I see every year, for the rest of my life, that sort of stuff. You kind of got to figure something else out. Like the part where it's like, I have to like conform to this idea of like, I mean, we talk about this a lot, right? Like passing and whatever that gets you so far. And like, it's still a going concern in the world. But you also still just have to like be a person. And most people settle down and like get married and have kids. And that's kind of how they define their personhood, a career. Transness includes oftentimes being shut out of a lot of that. I think queerness in general, for many people, it involves like you have to restart over early on in your life, or like later in life. Like, you know, you had everything figured out and then you came out and then everything blows up. You're cut off from your childhood. You have to relive a lot of your life. And it just means you're behind, like, you know, cis straight society. You know, people talk about like the missing stare stuff of like all these things that signify growing into adulthood. People lose by the nature of being in an outgroup. And I think that stuff is, and so as they cast about, like the dissatisfaction comes with like a recognition that there should be something there culturally that like seems to be missing. And on some level, it's like, I'm very sympathetic to them. They seem like messes, and I hope they figure it out. And I'm excited to read the rest of the book. But also, it makes me glad that I live surrounded by people who are figuring out, who have, like, gone through this thing and all care more about, like, the ideology behind it, like, the culture, like, caring about a culture, caring about a history, which we talk about a lot. I feel like in many ways, ALF is, like, secondarily about, like, queer history and, like, culture and learning to, like, understand and touch that and be involved with it.
Yeah.
So far it's really good. It's like messy. I understand, like, I'm like, there's like a certain type of person who's like really mad this is like bad trans representation. I'm sure that happened a bunch when it came out. In fact, we have a friend, Nora, was like, I read it because people were talking about how it was bad trans representation. Nora read it like right when it came out or whatever. It was funny because, like, I mean, Nora reads a lot of books, but I think of Nora as, like, a fantasy and science fiction girly and not interested in, like, lit fic in this way. But it's delightful to me that Nora's read this. It's, like, the one of the person in my friend group.
Yeah.
The ways in which it's imperfect are good. Like, Reese, there's, like, a whole bit that I thought was great where Reese was, like, I believe in feminism, right? Like, I care about these things, but, like, all the feminists don't think I'm a woman anyway. So, like, the fact that, like, Reese has this thing where she, like, kind of loves shitty men who treat her like shit because it, like, reaffirms her womanhood in, like, this very traditionalist way, like, very, like, traditional gender role sort of way. Like, if a guy treats her like a useless woman, then it must mean she is, like, a woman. It, like, you know, and it's like, a problematic thing. It's very, like, unfeminist of her. But she's like, the feminists hate me anyway, so why do I care what they think about how I should and shouldn't be? Like, at least I feel good about this.
Yeah.
And I think that stuff's really fascinating and interesting. It's made me contemplate myself, like, what I want more actively, like, my womanhood to look like, even if that's, like, coming much later in life. Don't want it to look like Reese's. That's a bit of a mess. But, like, it's one of those things where, like, you kind of just, like, can define the person you are. And that's scary in a lot of ways. Because, like, you could just choose poorly and waste a lot of years of your life being someone who doesn't, is, like, a bad fit or does more harm than good in, like, the narrative of your life. But you still got to choose, because not choosing is, like, paralyzing. And that's kind of where, like, Amy was at. Amy felt, like, paralyzed. I feel like Ames feels kind of paralyzed, too, and is getting a swift kick in the butt about it. So, yeah. I don't know. It's really good. I think all the interpersonal drama is really well considered and messy in the right ways, and the tensions are good, and I'm excited to see it through. It's nice to just read some goddamn fiction, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's one that sometimes I've been like, I should go back and like try and read that again. The fact that you have been reading it, and I, like, you know, even just talking on this a little bit, I'm like, oh, well, maybe I don't have to, like, completely restart, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Because there has been a little bit of, like, oh, I'm just going to have to, like, restart the book. Yeah. It was definitely, when I stopped reading it, I mean, a big part of it was the ADHD thing. And
yeah.
Also just the amount of people talking about it online being a thing that I didn't help with the motivation with the ADHD thing. I think it was also a little bit of, especially at the time that I was reading it, you know, I was, like, newer to this friend group. I still had, like, trans friends, but not as, like, close of trans friends. And there was a little bit of just reading it and being like, this is, like, slightly, I feel slightly despairing about, like, all these characters.
I do feel slightly I think, yeah. I think this is, to me, this feels like a book that's going to have a happy ending. I guess I don't know. I want to hope for them, you know? I think people will mostly figure it out. Even Ames's messy detransition, I think, has, there's so much sympathy for why he's done it. And I can't bring myself to, like, in the book, they describe, like, another detransitioner who, like, still kind of lingers around the, like, you know, the trans lesbian women group, and because he doesn't have anywhere else to go, basically, and how much they, like, kind of revile him but are afraid of him because he represents, like, their bad end. And Ames is like, or even when he's just Amy still is like, I don't want to ever be that. Like, once he decides to detransition, he cuts himself entirely off from his old life. And I think there's just so much, like, sympathy about like the overcorrectedness of it all and the ways in which these lines get delineated by people who are just trying to survive. Like there's a bit where there's like all the trans women are just in the park, like having a pic, like, you know, like just a trans social gathering. And it talks about how they all like instinctively gather on the top of this hill so no one can like sneak up on them or like have a position of power. Like just like no one like decided on this. It just kind of how they congregated where they would feel the safest in this like public space. I'm like, yeah, man, that fucking hits. That's the real shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember enjoying the way that the, you know, the way the characters were depicted, and there was that sympathy, but then also, like, all of them felt very imperfect in believable ways.
Yes,
or, this like, is why, there's well-drawn where, ways.
There's this part where, as Katrina's trying to understand, like, Ames, like, describing like alienation as like a trans woman is like, but what about like RuPaul and like mothering culture? And he's like, yeah, that's for trans women of color. Like, yeah, all the black and Latina women have figured this shit out, but the white trans women do not have this as a cultural group. We just are not into this. It ends up being a weird, like, fumbling, like, she's like, are you blaming your whiteness as the problem? And he's like, kinda, but like, not in the way you're implying here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just very, it feels very real to talking to people with like radically, even people in your in-group or you're like aligned with who just have very different contexts of things in the world and how complicated and like painful that can be. Even if like no one's actively doing harm, sometimes just talking to people about like stuff like this can be weird and like hurt and hurt. And not because people are doing harm, just because like, oh, the way you think of this is like actively prickly to like very sore points I have in life.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you enjoy the rest of it.
Yeah, me too. I'm going to bring my e-reader with me to the hospital. I'm going to keep reading. I did not last time I was in the hospital, but this time I'm like, I want to finish this book. And I don't think I'm going to finish by Tuesday. I think I'll be close, but I don't think I'll get there.
Yeah. I feel like I have not had the most of like reading and stuff this week. I mean, some of it was that I was just reading The Tone instead. Yeah. I did read a chapter or two more of Tehanu.
Speaking of painful feminist literature.
Yes. And like clearly, like, you know, at this point, Ged is shown back up. Like, I'm seeing a little bit more of, like, what the story is going to be to some extent.
Yeah.
Although, I am enjoying the way that this is a little slower and, you know, it's less clear of, like, and then we set out on an adventure in the way that some of the, you know, I think there's, like, a very intentional way of doing the big, you know, kids adventure thing. But then in imbuing it with like a different worldview than a lot of that stuff, in the first three books of Earthsea, but this one's definitely hitting the most.
You know how there, I don't know if you've seen any of this in the For You tab. There's been like some, just like constant, there's always a little bit of rumblings about like the idea of like Western Ayashike being like Japanese media form for like healing media, like the slice of life stuff that's like calming or, you know, pastoral, like Ghibli gets hit with this a lot. I feel like Tehanu is like that, but for real things, like for adults.
Yeah.
Cause it is all of those things, but it also, it does not like shy away from the fact that like, just because you're like living in nature and like life is slowed down and you have time to contemplate, that doesn't erase pain. It doesn't erase trauma. Like you still suffer under all the things you suffered under it. You're just going to do it way slower.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of the stuff with, Ogion, and like his passing and then, Tenar's like feelings about that. Oh, just like really hit me in feelings that I have about my Oma. Especially like, cause there's all my Oma died before I was like, actually I think my oma died before I was even like really out to family or anything. My opa was like, I had kind of started transitioning, but not much when he died. And he never knew, but, my oma is of the relatives, the person I feel is like very much like me, the most like me, of like family I regularly interacted with. And so, yeah, a lot of that chapter is like her feelings about mourning over, you know, the death of this like older mentor figure. And then it being like mixed up with also, her leaving to like go join the women's spaces instead of the like more masculine space of magic. And then also like now she has this child with her, who like Ogeon never really met. And it's just like, all of this is like hitting me specifically. Cause also both my oma and opa died before my kid was born too. I was just like, oof, oof, all of this. So yeah, that chapter in particular, for my own personal reasons, really got to me. But, yeah, I'm excited for the book and seeing where it goes.
Yeah. I love that book so much. It's like hard to talk about without you just having like done it.
Yeah.
But it's very good. Also just the way in which it is, her looking back at like, she told the whole story more or less, right? Like, I feel like the first three books do like a complete tale and then be like, there's like things here I could pick at. And then in picking at it, he's like, maybe I have way more to say about like how I feel about this now. Like, it feels like it didn't start that way, but it definitely became like, oh, the me now doesn't really agree with the me then. And I'm just going to grapple with it on the page. And I think that's really good.
Yeah. 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 I'm excited to continue reading it, but also, taking my time. I'll probably make a lot more headway with not having to read, for this podcast for a little bit, but, yeah, I feel like that's my main thing. That, and I mean, I've continued to play Uma Musume Pretty Dirty Derby, so.
Yeah, you talked about the V Shoujo stuff on Daivi and Uma Musume on Daivi, and I know you probably talk about Uma Musume on Stairwalls, which is not out yet, but will be by the time this goes up.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like belabor the point.
Yeah.
About any of those, unless you have more things to say. The V Shoujo situation is such a mess.
It really is. It's.
Because like even more stuff has happened today since like you record. I don't think Mint's video had gone up when you recorded that.
No, I haven't actually been able to check that one out yet. But
so she, well, one, she hasn't been paid for any of the Mint and Matara stuff, like in terms of merch. Like the Patreon, they just split themselves. But like all the merch stuff was through V Shoujo, and she hasn't seen any of that. I assume Matara hasn't either. And then she, shortly after that, had signed up with them like a year ago now, with the promise that she was going to develop and head an idol group that V Shoujo was going to do specifically, like a whole generation that was like idols that she was going to be the lead of, and has been like working on that actively for a year now.
Yeah,
which obviously has fallen through, which is like just like, man. You want to talk about like the most heartbreaking thing that Mint Phantom specifically could say it happened, right? That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And she made it sound like the everything clearly not going to work out and falling apart has happened very fast in the past few weeks. As I guess like this all kind of came tumbling down really fast. Nanners, who used to be in V Shoujo, left really early. And was it Silvervale? I don't really follow V Shoujo. My apologies. V Shoujo is like the one of the big independence corporations, and they were like really popular for one, having like way more leeway. Their talents could kind of just do what they wanted. And also the talents own all the like IP rights to their characters. So they were like the cool anti-corporation corporation. And they had a lot of, like, they were bigger, like, they had more Western talent faster, and they tend to be seen as, like, very cool and very, like, pro talent. It turns out they had no money and hadn't been paying people for ages, and stiffed a charity that their most famous talent, Iron Mouse, had, be like, donation drived a half $1 million to, had not given any of that to the charity. And it's just been, and everyone's left. It's just a, like, literally no, a company has never flamed out this hard in the space before. Anyway, Nanners used to be the big one before Iron Mouse. And she had a whole thing where she's like, yeah, me and Silvervale, brought all this stuff up. They wouldn't, like, when we signed our contracts, they didn't want us to, they, like, guilted us into not letting lawyers look at it. And when we started asking questions, they, like, pushed us out and then, like, set, like, a narrative that we had been difficult to work with, or were leaving because of, like, boyfriends or whatever. And we were, like, under NDA and couldn't say anything. So the other talent thought we had kind of, like, left the company on bad terms, but, like, we were at fault, and it really strained all these relationships, and none, like, nobody knew. And it's just, like, a disaster. It's, like, the worst thing that could happen in this space.
Yeah.
So that's been really bad. It's been a stressful couple days. A bunch of VTubers did, like, Tiltify, like, another donation drive for that charity that had been stiffed, and they made double the money. Like, they raised $1 million, and a lot of VTubers threw in, and it's been, like, a big celebratory time in that way. And I feel like the fandom has rallied around all of the girls all across, even V-Shoujo, a couple guys, like, all of the talents have been, like, it doesn't seem like anyone's at fault here that wasn't, like, the guys, like, the money men, right? Like, the V-Shoujo people, like, all our managers, like, the people we work with day to day are all great. Like, they weren't being paid either. It was, like, a disaster everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, Henya kept her manager. Like, it's like, no, same manager. We're just bouncing. We're just doing it our own now. It's crazy. The, like, weird dispersal that everyone just instantly, like, because everyone owns all their stuff, they just kind of kept going, and they're just cut out V-Shoujo.
Uh-huh.
Which I think is, like, overall good. Like, you know, the more that people realize they don't need corporations in this space, I think is, like, overall a good thing. I really desperately wish, and I'm not actually thinking this is going to happen. The thing I always think about whenever one of the big corporation VTubers goes indie is, someone's got to get everyone together in, like, a union and buy healthcare together. It's, like, the most important thing, because all these people, corporation or independent, are listed as independent contractors. Like most in industries like this, entertainment industries, they are not employees of the companies they work for, which means they don't get health insurance. And this was less of a problem when it was, like, a Japanese company where the health insurance was not provided by an employer. But once, like, American specifically VTubing took off, I feel like this should be the number one issue. And I understand everyone's in their 20s and is not thinking about it. But as VTubers get married and get go into 30s and get older and start having kids, you need fucking healthcare.
Yeah.
And let's say there's, like, 500 VTubers in America, right? There's probably more than that, but let's say there's 500 that are making some amount of money. If they all got together and paid dues to just simply buy healthcare, they could get more affordable healthcare. That's how this works. That's literally what, like, a trade union is for.
Yeah.
But they're also a bunch of streamers in their 20s and early 30s. I understand there's not, like, a will to be the person to drive that. And also the nature of the job doesn't necessarily, like, just, like, I'm not saying that no one here is, like, would be aligned with that idea. I'm not saying they're all, like, weird libertarians because they're tech people. I don't think that's true. But I do think it's, like, it's a big leap between, like, I wish this was a thing that happened and I'm going to be the one to do it. And I just don't know if there's anyone who's willing to, like, be that political will. And I think it's weird. Like, I don't want to expect, like, someone has to stand up. Like, they're really busy. Like, Iron Mouse isn't going to do it. She'd benefit the most, but, like, she's got a disability. She has, like, an immune disorder. She's barely, like, out of bed. Like, and that's, like, a new thing because she's been very successful. She's been able to pay for medical care, where now she can get out of bed, and she didn't used to be able to do that. She's not going to do it, right?
Yeah.
It's just fucked up everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the things where, like, there was famously a comedian strike in the 80s that, like, they talked about forming a union. This happened in California and it ended up falling apart. This happened with wrestlers in the 80s also, because they're all independent contractors, always have been. They thought of, like, doing a union organization. Famously, Hulk Hogan blew that up because he's a fucking rat bastard man, always has been.
Yeah.
it's one of those things that keeps coming up in entertainment industries, and someone, I hope someone pulls the trigger sometime. I think it'd be good for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is wild how much everyone's just pulled out, you know?
Yeah. 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 It was like literally within a whole day, everyone was just like, we're done. We're done. We're totally out of it. And then, like, all they lost all their tags and the affiliates on VShoto disappeared, and that's it. K-Son, like their biggest Japanese talent, dragged the Japanese CEO onto her live stream and demanded he explain himself and then quit in front of him.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. It's been wild.
Yeah. And in the middle of this, Nimi Nightmare posts, I'm getting married. Truly an angel among angels. I love her for this.
Yeah.
Would not be deterred. She's like, lore drop. I know it's weird to say this, but I'm getting married. It's so cute. I love her so much.
Congrats to Nimi Nightmare.
Congrats, Nimi Nightmare. Everyone's been really super excited about this. Like, there's always, like, the weirdos who crash out about the fact that VTubers don't exist to be your girlfriend and fuck you someday. But honestly, the response has mostly been very positive. People fucking love her and are happy for her. And it's great. I think the audience is more normal than people give it credit for sometimes.
Yeah.
I think most of the normal audience is very quiet, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. I think the weirdos are really loud.
Yeah. I think that's true in a lot of cases, but
yeah.
The nature of VTubing, I think, probably helps even more amplify the weirdos.
Yes.
Because they're the people who are going to be most likely to be constantly spending money on a bunch of like super chats and stuff. So there's also just a way in which, like, you will be seeing their stuff more. Even beyond social media stuff.
Yeah.
See, for example, me blocking V Faction on YouTube so that I don't have to see his comments.
I don't know who that is. I never read chat, so.
Yeah. It seems like once a quarter, at least, there's something where V Faction said something too out of pocket.
Okay.
So, and then there's just like some discourse on Twitter about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, I mean, it seems like so far most of the talent is in a good spot. So, or, you know, doing the best.
Yes.
It seems like that everybody pulling out has been a good thing overall. Even if the circumstances still fucking suck.
Project Melody was like, I need to take a couple of weeks. This is very upsetting. I'll be back hornier than ever. And I was like, God bless, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough. Some people handling it better than others. Like, it's like, oh, Henya's like a distraught.
Yeah.
K-Son will be fine. She's like, fuck it. I'm going indie. I should have gone indie the first time. I guess she did. She was indie for a while before she joined up with VShoto, so she'll be fine.
Yeah.
The weirdest part has been the people who, as coming out, like, they're like really small VTubers are like, I auditioned for VShoto and said yes like 8 months ago, and they've been working on my debut and they keep pushing it back. And it turns out because they had no fucking money to debut us, but they'd been like basically working on stuff that no one had seen for ages now and pouring money into it. And now that's all gone. Those are the people who are like totally fucked, right?
Yeah.
It seems like the audience is rallying around them people also. So.
Yeah. It's, you know, I hope everybody continues to succeed.
Yeah, I don't really follow. The only VShoto person I particularly follow is Matara, and she left months ago. So,
yeah. I mean, I do feel like there's the slight effect of just a lot of people are Twitch, and I just don't watch Twitch.
Yes, yes.
In part just because the website is like, I like it.
It's like the worst thing I've ever seen. Yes.
I don't know if I have too much else. I mean, I know there's things that we can do, but.
I mean, there's the Poutons, but I didn't know if you were like done. I don't think I have that much else. It's been a very tired week.
Yeah.
My medical stuff's already all figured out. I mean, people who listen to these episodes in a row. That all got sorted. I'm good to go. Tuesday. I mean, yeah, obviously. I talked about it at the beginning, but like that stuff got sorted. Like so, a lot of it the next day after we recorded. I put it in the show notes that like my FMLA paperwork was sorted or whatever. And then like my last thing I heard back early, like on Monday. So I got my surgery soap today and I'm ready to go. So.
Yeah.
Load up my iPad with all the things I'm going to watch. Most of them we'll probably talk about here.
That's true.
Yeah. Here's my advice if you have to go in the hospital for any length of time. Don't turn on the TV. Put movies on your iPad or your tablet or your laptop or even your fucking phone. Don't turn on the TV. The TV is, especially the hospital TV that just got fucking like cable, basic cable package, is just a machine of misery. When I was in the hospital in 2023, like I was in a lot of pain the entire time. Way worse than my surgery pain, honestly, because they didn't know what was wrong and it was bad. And I just was watching TV all night in like morphine sweats and it was like truly awful. I had a terrible, and because it's like, you know, you're watching fucking TV Land and then it's like 15 minutes of commercials about like Medicare and pills. And you're like, this makes me want to die while I'm here in this hospital. And the time after, I was like, not turning on the TV. I'm just going to get my iPad. I watched every Saw movie. I watched a bunch of Discovery and Picard. I wasn't prepped to be in the hospital, but like I made it work. And this time I'm like, I've got a bunch of anime. I've got some movies. I'm ready to go. Do it standing on my head. I will not be standing on my head. In fact, I should not be doing that. That would probably be very, very bad.
Yeah, don't stand on your head.
I couldn't stand on my head if I was like, well, much less post-surgery.
Yeah.
I have nothing else. I truly don't.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to talk about your stuff yesterday or not. I was like, maybe that's not podcast material.
Like, my stuff yesterday?
You had a thing happen yesterday. Like, a notable thing in your life happened yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That I'm not directly talking about for...
Okay, you know. That's fine. No, that's totally fair.
Yeah. I guess at some point I might have reports about the Nintendo Switch too, but not yet, yeah. Really.
Okay.
You've probably interacted with that more than I have, honestly.
I held it, went, man, they didn't fix anything, huh? And then gave it back to my brother. That's for later.
So I guess I have interacted with it a little bit more.
Yeah. I don't even have an account set up on my brother's Switch 2 yet. That's for when I'm like home from the hospital.
Okay. Yeah. I've not interacted with it too much, but I mean, it is nicer than the Nintendo Switch, but it's still, you hold that and you hold the Steam Deck and you're like, all right. but I've also been, just the project that I'm doing at work right now, some of the stuff is just moving at a clip. I've just been busy at work. I'm glad I'm back on Adderall for all of this, but, yeah. I just like had a flurry of shit to do this week. And now I think I'm like settling into not as much to do, except it is still just like a big thing, but it's like one thing, which I prefer than having to do like 8 different things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's nice to just settle into like, I've got this thing basically. But yeah, it sounds like it's time for Hokuto and Kamiyama Pondering Puton, a grueling and serious examination of Karate High School, a podcast within a podcast.
I'm going to be honest. I feel like I like doing this segment, but I feel like I'm running out of, like, I think it's just my cohesion is bad this week, last couple weeks. Because I listened to the episode, and I thought the episode was really good. And I read the chapter. Not only did I read it on Monday, I read it again tonight, because for the life of me, I can't figure out how the show podcast connects to the chapter. But I'm sure it does, because I just believe that it does. I believe you do the work here. And, like, abstractly, I guess, maybe, I want to know what you think the way it connects is.
I mean, this one was me specifically talking about trying to put Connor into a situation where he would feel on the back foot, where he would need to, you know, a thing that would not be his usual situation.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
With the VTubers and then Lisa May. And then I also acknowledged that he had already done that to me by, taking a simple statement that I said and then demanding a, like, cohesive, philosophical, extended definition of what that is.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that I just don't even operate that way. I don't believe in definitions like that. So we both got put into sort of, you know, situations where we might be a little, on the back foot, a little, you know.
That makes sense. I'll accept it. That seems like a pass.
Yeah.
I just don't think I have that many thoughts. I know that I'm dropping the ball and I feel bad, but I genuinely, it's been so rough, and I feel like I've been saying that for like weeks now, and I just beg people's forgiveness. We're really kind of crashing out a little bit on the road here. I'm at this point where, like, I don't think I'm, like, actively getting worse. I think what happened is, like, I unclenched of, like, all the anxiety, and, like, I just got to tank all this because until the end's in sight, like, about 3 weeks too early. and I'm just like I sit at work and I'm, like, reading over my lunch, and I find myself, like, nodding off while I'm reading my book. Like, I'll just be, like, sitting there and be like, I realize I'm, like, having micro sleeps, like, during the afternoon.
Yeah.
I'm just not together right now.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't. You know, I hate it. I'm very bad at not being on the ball. Like, I overvalue my own capacity to just kind of deal with stuff and be competent despite everything. And I feel like I found the limits of that.
Yeah.
Like, I understood the emotion. Like, I was, like, over it as, like, an idea, but, like, I just think I've hit my physical limit of, I just don't think I can do it right now.
Yeah.
It's not very interesting. I'd just be like, I don't know. I'm too tired and disabled to do this podcast bit properly. I feel bad.
It's okay. You don't have to be able to do it great. Hokuto's Pondering Proctors, a review of Hokuto and Kamiyama's Pondering Bhutan, a podcast within a podcast within a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're going to do a pass fail this week, and you did get a pass.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where we're at.
Yeah. I'll take it. Are we done?
I think so.
All right. Hour and a half.
I'm tired.
No, that's fair. I'm tired, too.
Yeah.
Where can people find you?
You can find me at foxsomnia.exportaud.io on Bisky. You can go look at all my other podcasts there. I really need to update that post, but... mostly just to update the Ornate Stairwells art.
Mm.
But there are links to all of my podcasts there, except for Tubi, which I'm sometimes on. That's not in that one.
I would love for you to be on Tubi more, frankly, but I understand that's, like, not easy.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I take my kid to swim class and then I have to come back from swim class.
I know.
Have lunch and then...
I know.
Yeah.
It's just very funny, like... this has become the Molly, and Autumn and Nora podcast suddenly.
Yeah.
Not who I thought the cast would be of regulars on the show. Molly wasn't even involved in this originally. It's been great. I've always wanted an excuse to podcast with Molly regularly. Me and Molly are good friends, but we never had an idea where we both want to do it because we both understand the other person's busy and doesn't want to do extra work. And so it's been nice to have this be the thing.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Go listen to Ornate Stairwells. Go listen to Ghost Tigers.
You're back.
Yeah.
Are you gonna have an interruption because of Autumn's vacation, or is that
handled? No, we're gonna watch the movie the Friday after they get back, and then record Saturday, and we'll be fine.
Okay. What are you watching for that?
Bound.
Oh right, yeah. That's me and Dusty's influence.
Yeah.
Autumn hasn't seen Bound. What the fuck?
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
Yeah. That's like genuinely going to be one of their movies of all time. It's like a gay ass lesbian noir with a ridiculous plot, a ton of style. It's like made for them.
Yeah. It's like I'm excited to revisit it because I have not I haven't seen it since like high school, maybe undergrad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's really good. It's really funny. Me and Destiny revisited it in preparation for the season of Chucky that was going to reference Bound.
Yeah. I remember enjoying it, but I was also just like, I was a different person. Like, mm-hmm. in some very literal ways, and then also just the general way than I am now. So I'm excited to revisit it. And there are sometimes just movies where I'm like, if I knew that you hadn't seen this at all, I would have like pushed for us to watch it earlier.
Yeah.
Like how they never seen Blues Brothers. We still need to do that for the podcast.
Autumn, I knew you listened to this fucking show. That's one of my favorite movies. Get on it. Stop disappointing me.
I'm definitely not continuing a bit where I lie about how they haven't seen it.
Oh, well, God damn it. You can't do this to me. I just take you seriously. Autumn has not seen so many things that I was 100% willing to believe.
I know.
I apologize, Autumn, for pulling this card. I should.
No, still yell at them about it. Everyone go. Not everyone. It'll get too annoying. Somebody go into the Discord, and if somebody has not done it yet, be like, Autumn, I can't believe you haven't seen it.
But only one person.
Yeah, only one person. You got to check and see. Somebody else done it. Autumn, I can't believe you haven't seen Blues Brothers.
If Autumn bans you from the Discord, just DM me. I'll let you back in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only as one person gets that exception.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no one else apologized, but I apologize, Autumn. I don't want to pull the you have to watch this for me card on something you have actually seen. I think that's like a card I take very seriously. That's a sacred duty when I pull the, no, I really need you to do this one. And I'm in the middle of trying to get Autumn to read Detransition Baby, so I don't want to like blow all my capital at once.
Yeah. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky at PolarBearSummer.online. I'm going to be honest, I probably will not be either I'll not be posting very much at all, or I'll be posting way too much. I hope it's not very much at all. I feel like way too much means that I'm like experiencing my hospital stay badly, but I guess we'll find out. If you'd like to listen to my podcast, they can all be found at neuralmapping.com. Listen to Cosmo Champs. There's an episode that went up last week about the end of the Sanctuary arc where we just go to town on that and have a great time. It's a really good episode. Abnormal Mapping is already out for this month on Children of the Sun. That's a pretty fun episode as well. If you want to watch me and Dia play the Blueprint, just Blueprints, you can find that youtube.com/@DiaLucina. There's probably another episode out as of like 2 days ago that we recorded over the weekend. That's, I think, the last thing I've got going on. We're kind of crashing into the end of my time. There's a VoIP that just came out on Monday that me and Jackson haven't recorded yet because we didn't get it done last week because last week got away from us. I don't know what that's about yet. We'll figure it out this weekend. It's like the one podcast I have to do this weekend, and I have no idea what it's going to be. If you'd like to listen to that, go to support our show at patreon.com/normalmapping for $1 a month. You get the Great Gundam Project. When I'm back from surgery, that's going to be me and Jackson watching Gundam Build Fighters and Vision of Escaflowne, which is going to be great. For $5, you get Blockbusters, which didn't have one this month, but normally we watch big Hollywood movies. Right now, it's going to be our only hot movie podcast for the rest of the year because Reptoy Screen is on hiatus. And for $10 every 2 weeks, you get VoIP Life, where we just goof around and talk about bullshit. We do quizzes, all sorts of... It's a weird show. It's hard to describe what VoIP Life is. It's just kind of us filling an hour with some bullshit. Yeah. People like it. Listen to 2BM on that. I won't be on the next episode, but I will be back as soon as possible. I hope someone fills in my absence and gives Nora a hard time and is good at the game. That's what's important. Not only do you give Nora a hard time, you have to be good at the guessing game.
Yeah.
And Curly does one, but not the other. And Autumn does one, not the other. I need someone who can do both.
Well, apparently if it's Star Wars, then it could be Ina.
Yeah. Be a Star Wars expert, Ina.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gave Nora a great name for a Dark Souls quiz. I hope she uses it on someone. Not me, though. I don't know shit about Dark Souls. Don't even try.
Oh, yeah. I would be fucked.
Yeah. Despite the fact that on Molly. That's for Molly or Jackson. Yeah. That's it.
It is funny because I think I probably played Demon Souls before anybody else. It was like very early to playing Demon Souls and then fell off of it and have never played another one of those.
That doesn't surprise me. That's like a very you thing to do. Also, your relationship to gaming and like life changed a lot in that time.
Oh yeah. Boy, howdy did it.
Yeah. All right. Let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah. I'm tired. There's corn sweat happening right now in the Midwest. I don't know if you've heard of this.
I've lived in the Midwest my entire life.
Yeah, the corn is releasing apparently massive amounts of moisture into the air. And
It raised the humidity like crazy, and it's already hot, so it makes it worse.
There's like a heat dome or something, too. So it's like, it's not even like moving. Like often stuff will move around, and it's not really.
Yeah.
If you have, for example, asthma or a heart disease, they're like, you should not spend a lot of time outside because, it could be very bad for you. And I'm like,
but cool, you've got both those things.
Yeah. Thankfully I have central air, but, I have felt just like, still, from being outside a little bit of just like, oh, because I think the air quality's bad here too and everything. I'm just like, man, I'm all this is fucking me up. But I'll survive.
I'd be sad if you died too.
Yeah. I'd be very sad. Except that I would cease existing in that part.
Yeah. Well,
yeah. I'm not saying that part would be nice, but I don't believe in an afterlife, so.
No, you just wouldn't be around to be sad about it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah. We'll be back in like 3 weeks. Until then, we're out of the podcast.
And then we're out of the podcast.